Welcome to The Process Podcast, an interview series focused on the process of survival as a creative. Season 6 features conversations with visual artists and curators and gallerists from the Bay Area of California. These conversations took place during a 3-month-long residency at the Growlery, an incredible organization based in San Francisco, who facilitated many of these conversations. They can be found at thegrowlery.org. We have also launched a Patreon for those who want to and are able to provide some financial support for the show to help us keep going. You can learn more about why we've launched that and where the money goes and how it will help us grow at patreon.com/theprocessco. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope you dig the season. Cheers, y'all.
Hi, hello, happy Tuesday, or whatever day you're listening to this. For this week's episode, we spoke with George McCallman. George was raised in Brooklyn and is based in San Francisco. He credits his Caribbean background for his unique ability to both embrace and rebel against traditional modes of design, enabling his work to simultaneously integrate and stand out in its industry. He is a fine artist, illustrator, and graphic designer. His studio, McCallman Co., serves primarily art, lifestyle, and food clients. He's also been the creative director on many magazines and has worked on many magazines in other capacities, such as Mother Jones, Entertainment Weekly, Ready Made, and Good Company. He works with brands to create a classic, long-standing brand that continues to define its clients as they evolve. His fine art practice combines social commentary with aesthetic precision and draws inspiration from his community and the world around him. He's also working on a book called Illustrated Black History, and you can find pieces of his Illustrated Black History series on his Instagram. But the book will be published by Amistad Press, which is a division of HarperCollins, and released February 2020. So pretty soon. In this episode, we talk about all of that and how George took a sabbatical and learned to call himself an artist in midlife and what that process was like for him, how he learned to redefine how he sets his value as a designer and a creative director and the owner of a studio, his role of a collaborative network and support system in making that leap, feeling his way through art projects rather than overthinking it, how the Illustrated Black History Project came to be, why there hasn't been a contemporary book on Black history before this one within his research. A lot of conversation about how he reframed conversations with publishers and what that entire process was like. And yeah, a whole lot more. I really enjoyed this episode. This is a longer conversation. We went super in-depth on many things. So I hope you dig it. And you can find show notes and links to everything we talk about at theprocess.co, as well as our past episodes if you're new here, and links to all the other places you can listen, find us, and sign up to our emails and all that good stuff. I hope y'all have a stellar week. Catch you next time.
My name is George McCallman. I am an artist, and I run a design studio, a creative director also. And I'm based in San Francisco.
You've been running your design studio, I think I read, for like 8 years now.
8 years, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Tomorrow is actually going to be the 9th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
I had misspoken. Yeah, 9 years
Time
ago.
Mm-hmm. How big's the team at the design
studio? It's changed. And my studio is very atypical because I made a conscious decision that I didn't want to be an art director who walked into a sea of people every day. So I work differently with different projects. I have a full-time employee, but every project I have has people who are a part of the team of whatever that
like
I'm doing.
Like contractors type of.
Yeah, or different collaborators. Okay. So I'm working with a lot of people all the time, but I, at my studio, I have my design associate, and my studio also has a photographer and an architect, and the architect happens to be my boyfriend.
Oh, wow. Do you like architecture work? Is that like a part of the client services?
No.
Okay.
No, I just happened. My boyfriend just moved into the studio also.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the studio environment itself is pretty varied because there's a lot of different things happening at all times. And it's a pretty good symbolic breakdown of my own interests also.
Yeah.
I am interested. I've worked with a lot of photographers, and one of my closest friends is a photographer. A lot of my friends are photographers, actually. Yeah. So
what drove the decision to start your own studio, and what were you doing before that?
I have mostly been a magazine creative director. I grew up in New York, and I started in publishing there, working for Time Warner. I started out as an intern at Money Magazine, and then I became a full-time person there. And then I went over to Entertainment Weekly and worked there for a couple of years. And then I moved out to San Francisco. A job moved me out here. A magazine that used to be in San Francisco called Health Magazine. I was there art director. I worked out with myself that I wanted to work only 2 years at every magazine I worked at, and that I made that true. Every publication I went to, I was there for exactly 2 years. I would learn enough about the subject matter, which was the real reason I went around from place to place. It was a way of me learning about San Francisco. Magazines are very kind of cyclical and repetitive, and I knew that after 2 years I would start being bored with the same kinds of stories, and I would be less interested, and I always wanted to be interested in what I was doing.
Right.
That was my history, but it gave me a lot of the skills that I employ in my own studio practice that still to this day I know comes from my magazine experience.
Those are like pretty traditional magazines that you worked for in the early days.
I worked at also very atypical publications. I worked for Wired, Money Magazines, Mother Jones is what I meant to say, not Money Magazine, and Ready Made. And Ready Made was the magazine that really probably influenced me the most as far as I learned about the creative community in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, via that publication. And I was also one of the older people working there. And I was in my 30s at the time, and working with basically kids who didn't really know what they were doing, but were super enthusiastic about it, was just a really fantastic. I met a lot of people who have remained very close and dear to my heart working at the publication. And it also was a purely creative experience. And it just was a joy to do that. And after I left there, the magazine actually moved to Des Moines, Iowa, which is a much longer story for another day. I remember thinking as I was going to work at the next magazine that that magazine had spoiled me, that experience had spoiled me, and I had seen a different way of working.
Yeah.
You know, because it was created by two women who had no prior magazine experience on the business and editorial side. And as a result, they just thought more openly. They weren't, soured by, any kind of norm, any traditional norms of making decisions. And that was a really wonderful experience. And it made me realize that I trusted my own instincts more than previous jobs had led me to believe in terms of just what I was learning and intuiting on my own, that I had more experience and more to give than my jobs were really allowing me to do.
Okay.
And that I didn't really want to keep working for other people.
Yeah.
That I was ready to go out on my own.
Well, I'm surprised just from that, hearing all of that, that you didn't start your own publication.
Because I know the business of magazines.
Okay.
I will
not
never...
Not sustainable enough?
No. I know how much work is involved.
Okay.
It's really, it's not the sustainability thing, even though I have a lot of issues with the business of magazines. I think the business of creating magazines is much more organic and more individual than there isn't really just a way to do a magazine. There are lots of different ways to do magazines. No, I just respect how much work is involved. There's no way to do a magazine where it doesn't consume your soul. And what I wanted to do was spend a little more time on my own creative output and less about facilitating a process that is just going to consume everyone else.
Right. Yeah.
And even though I'm doing magazines again after stepping away from them for about 6 years, I will always join someone else's crusade.
Okay.
It's unlikely that I will start my own magazine.
Yeah. As of now, are you able to have a pretty healthy balance of work and your own creative endeavors.
Absolutely. And that's what I, there was an important piece of the story 3 years ago. I took a sabbatical and I was having a little bit of a crisis, you know, kind of midlife crisis a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. And I decided that I needed to fire all my clients and start over again. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. And that's when I started painting and drawing. And for the first time since my college years, uh-huh. I hadn't done any of that. And I was so in the kind of corporate world of giving my all uh-huh. during the time and having not a lot of energy for myself
right.
when I got home. And I'd been doing that for so long. I was kind of yearning to move to something that was more purely creative. And it's why I surrounded myself with creative people. I didn't see myself as an artist. I always thought of myself as a facilitator. Mm-hmm. And so for me, being around that energy was really important and helping to shepherd and guide and mentor people. I did a lot of that. I did too much of it.
Yeah.
And it really kind of burned me out for my own experience. I was having other people's experiences, but I wasn't having my own. And so I needed to just clear the deck and frankly, just clear some of that energy out of my life so that I could delve into myself and find out who was underneath all of that. And so that's what I did.
So when you did that, when you paused, like fired all your clients, did you know that you were going to pick up painting and drawing again? Or was it more like you didn't know what was going to happen?
I didn't know it was going to happen at all. I had no plan. I just had a feeling.
How did that happen? Like, what drove you to pick up a pen?
Because it was the one area, it was a huge blind spot. It was something that I had been thinking about mm-hmm. and I had been just kind of ruminating on. Mm-hmm. And thinking back, I had spent so much time drawing as a kid and a teenager and in college. And I thought I was going to be an illustrator when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And I talked myself out of pursuing that because it was a time where there weren't a lot of options. And even the language around it was very kind of obtuse and much more binary. You were either an artist or you were an art director. And when you were an art director, you helped people who were artists achieve their artistry. And it was much more of a service provider that you're there to facilitate and guide. But that you're not one of them.
Interesting. That's never been my perception. I didn't know mm-hmm. that.
Publishing is very structured in that way. And you have to be because especially when you're working at high octane, like defining your role is really important to meeting your deadline.
Okay.
Like everybody knowing.
Everyone needs to know exactly what they need to do.
Everyone needs to know exactly what they're doing, when, how. And it's your job as an art director to be the custodian of all of that information. Uh-huh. So having answers for everyone else became my norm.
Right.
And I realized that I got to a point where I didn't have a lot of answers for myself. And that really bothered me.
Yeah.
So I taking that time for myself was, I think, one of the first really adult decisions I made in my life.
It's a scary one too, right?
It is. It is. And I was also old enough to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So I didn't pretend that I had it figured out. I was freaked out. I was scared. I was worried I wouldn't make a living.
Yeah.
I was worried that I had waited too long to do this and that I had missed a boat. I really second-guessed my decision continually.
Yeah.
And having a community of people that I really love and trust around me that I could just say, I don't know what I'm doing. And to have them just be really encouraging and supportive was probably the reason that I was able to do this.
Who makes up that community? Like, where did those people come from?
All over. You know, I have really strong friendships with people. People don't have to be in the same city for me to remain close to them.
Same, yeah.
And so for me, getting on the phone and having a good hour-long conversation where I'm listening or I'm speaking about something that is going on is pretty common for me.
Yeah.
So I had any number of people, and my friendships are actually really, I'm a super social person, mm-hmm. but my close friends are actually really tight. And my friendships have actually gotten more intimate and deeper over the last few years, especially as I put myself on this path, just really acknowledging a sense of not always having the answers was really important for my own development. And as an artist, as defining myself as an artist for the first time in my life also, you know, that wasn't something I felt comfortable saying up until last year.
Wow.
You know, even though it's clear to me now looking back, all the breadcrumbs were there.
Yeah.
But even language around talking about who I am really started and evolved through those conversations.
Yeah.
And so friends in New York, friends in Europe, friends in South America, friends in Mexico, friends in LA, friends in Florida. I have a vast network of people, mainly through my magazine experience.
Yeah.
You know, I've become friends with a lot of the people that I've hired. And they, in turn, have either hired me for their own design needs when I went out on my own. And so the relationships have really deepened because we've worked a few different ways over time. A lot of illustrators really asking and feeling comfortable asking about the process of making a living as an artist. That is something I had a lot of questions about.
Yeah.
And I felt really wonderful that I had quite a few options of people to say, can you tell me how you did this? Can you, you know, I was able to audit my process and have an open discussion about the choices I was making. It was everything I needed to feel comfortable moving in this direction. And so the first year I illustrated and I painted and I drew and it became an obsession. And I still didn't know how I was going to make a living. But I also felt it was the happiest my body and soul and mind had ever been.
Wow.
And so for me, it was just like a no-brainer that I was going to keep doing this. But it took about a year and a half for it to settle how I was actually going to do this long term. I knew that this is what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. But I was still kind of confused about how does this work exactly? And then living in the, you know, most expensive city in the country currently is also really tricky. And there were a lot of circumstances that challenged if I was actually going to stay in the city. But there was so many powerful moments that kept reminding me that this is the place that I had to be. And it almost became this spiritual quest where I was always looking for answers around me and getting really powerful symbols being reflected at me. So every time I was at a point where I would say, oh, I don't think this is going to work, something amazing would happen. And I was like, okay, I am supposed to be there. And so it was this really schizophrenic experience where I was just kind of like, yes, I'm supposed to be here. No, yes, no. But meanwhile, creating, really creating this language for myself, this visual language that was just like spilling out of me. That was the easiest part, was that the creative process was just revealing itself to me. And that is the one thing I did not have to think about.
Wow.
I would just sit down, pick up a tool and create something. And it was just kind of like, wow, this has been here all along.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that it was here. Most importantly, I didn't feel the need to ask for anyone's approval to do it. I just did it.
Right.
And I did it really intensely and intently, like with intent.
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, yeah, I know how to do this. And so I don't really care if you like it or you like it or you like it. Like, I just gave myself permission to create according to my own kind of desires and standards. And it just felt really good.
Totally. There's a lot to unpack there. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what the first thing that you started drawing was?
Mm-hmm. I decided, and I was actually pretty methodical about this. Even my thinking about how I was going to approach it is very much a construct of being an art director. I gave myself assignments, and I gave myself assignments with parameters. I knew that if it was too wide open, I would talk myself out of it. I treated myself like a child.
Yeah, like with the treat yourself as like an art director, or you acted as an art director to yourself.
I acted as an art director to myself. Totally. So I was like, I need to give myself some terms.
Mm-hmm.
that's going to allow me to finish, start and finish the thing just to see if I can do it.
Right.
Because if I don't, then I'm going to find all the reasons to not do it or to overthink it or to be in my head about it.
Yeah.
And I need to just, like, I work well under deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
That's what being in magazines means, that you work calmly under really intense deadlines.
Yeah.
And it is like being in the, I've often called it being in the military, being in an ER. Mm-hmm. You just have to perform. Time is not waiting for you.
Right.
So you have to have a strong sense of yourself. You have to know, and you have to let the other people that are working around you know that it's okay to freak out, but we're still going to figure it out, and we have to, because there's a limited time. That's what I gave myself, basically. So the very first project I did over time was just painting typography. Mm-hmm. It was like the gateway, my gateway drug.
Okay.
Like, I knew type. I'm a typographer, and painting phrases was kind of the thing that made the most sense.
Right.
And so I did that for several months. And then when I decided I was going to start over again, the first project I assigned myself was really ambitious for me. I wanted to do a daily painting of a Black History pioneer.
Okay.
And that started 3 years ago, this week.
Oh, wow.
And I started doing it, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to complete it.
Yeah.
And it terrified me, and it exhilarated me, and I threw myself into it. And
have you painted people before?
No.
Okay. Ah.
No.
Yeah, it's an endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I decided the parameters were going to be, it was not going to be in color.
Mm.
It was going to be in black and white.
Okay.
And I didn't want to waste time thinking about color theory, because I knew I would approach it as an art director, not as an artist. And so I was like, don't get in your head about this. You know value, you know dark to light, you know how to create. What if it's just an emotional experience? What if you're just feeling your way through this?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did. And I established early on that it was really strange. I was just kind of like, I know what I'm doing. And I wasn't worried. There was just an exhilaration in sitting down and doing it. And I didn't think anything I was doing was not good, you know? And that was like the first thing I wanted to see, because I was going to judge myself not as an artist, but as an art director.
Right.
So I wanted a body of work that I could assess and say, is this good enough to go out there with? And pretty much the first week, I was like, I think this is good.
Were you sharing this publicly?
I was.
Okay.
And that was the way that I made sure I didn't get in my feelings about it.
Okay.
It was a daily post on Instagram.
Mm.
And I called it Illustrated Black History. And I had started the project with a friend of mine. And she was writing the bios, and I was doing the illustrations. I called them illustrated portraits. And then she had to step away from the project. And so I continued doing it, and I wrote the rest of it.
Hmm.
And the process was really great, doing the research and making it. We were going to do it initially, like, you know, 2 or 3 a week. And then I went crazy, and I was like, I want to do this every day.
Yeah.
You know, at the point where she said she was stepping back, I said, you know what? I'm just going to make my life even more complicated.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do it every day.
How long did they take you typically?
All sorts of, because it was brand new.
Yeah.
Some were super detailed, and some were really stylized.
Okay.
And everyone kind of took on its own personality. Mm-hmm. And I remember doing one of ballerina, the first Black ballerina at New York Ballet. And my friend called me and said, these are emotional. Like, I can see your line work is taking on the personality of each person that you're doing. And I was like, she understands what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's the first time I had that reflected back at me, that my approach to each of these portraits started from scratch.
Yeah.
Every time I sat down, I was approaching it as a new subject.
Right.
So there wasn't a consistency in it in that way that a lot of artists have.
Yeah.
I was considering who each person was and then starting over.
Wow.
Every time I did it. So the styles were pretty different and all that. But at the same time, like the first week, I remember laying them all out. And they were all different sizes also. Mm-hmm. I was using different paper. I was using newsprint, and doing giant brush strokes. Mm-hmm. And then I would do these little pieces with pointillism. And it was just all of the things I was interested in.
Did you just read about each person and like look at their photos and stuff? And that's what called you to like, okay, this is gonna...
Yes. Wow.
Cool.
Once I did my research and found out a little bit about their personality, mm-hmm. it was evident. Yeah. Like you would look and you could see who each person was based on their, either their accomplishments, their struggle, their pain, their joy. You know, I represented that. Yeah. And, you know, I finished the last one on the last day. I think it was the 30th. It was like one day more than February usually is. Mm-hmm. It was like a leap year. And I totally finished it just like right before midnight. Mm-hmm. And I cried. It was such an accomplishment that I had done it. You know, I just wanted to see if I could do it more than anything else. And I did it. And it was such a relief. And I remember finished crying and like, okay, what's next? And then it just went on from there. I gave myself a few more assignments like that. And then about a month later, and several people during this process said, oh, I can see this as a monograph. I can see this as a book. And I couldn't wrap my head around that at the time. It was just kind of like, I'm just trying to baby steps.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to show myself something here. I can't think outside of my process right now. Because that's what I'm used to doing. Mm-hmm. I am used to thinking ahead.
Right.
And I wanted to just be really present with myself during the process. And a couple months later, I really realized, oh, this is what I do. I was drawing and illustrating obsessively all the time. I mean, just like in my daily life. Mm-hmm. I was sitting on Muni and drawing people. And I was painting type. And I was just doing... But I was doing it all with the economy of an art director. I didn't have a studio. I didn't have places to just like put up on the wall and draw big. And so it was all just very considered. A few months in, I was like, oh, I think this is what I'm doing now.
With the Black History Project, did you feel more connected to the history?
Yes. Yes. No, absolutely. It was something I realized. And so it actually... is going to be a book.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
It is. Thank you.
Yeah.
I got a book deal last July with HarperCollins.
Oh, wow.
And it is coming out in a year and a half.
Wow. That's amazing.
Fall of 2020.
Are you using the old material or are you also developing new stuff?
Both. Wow. Both. It ended up being a pretty impactful body.
Yeah.
When it was all said and done and I stepped back from it a few months, I really thought, oh, I mean, I assumed that there had been contemporary books about American Black history. And then I started looking around and poking around and realized, oh, there actually isn't anything. And that's crazy.
Yeah.
And goddamn America, like, what are you doing?
What
is America doing? But on a really personal level, I was just deeply offended that it hadn't existed. But I also knew publishing and it made total sense why. I almost knew too much of why. And I was hesitant.
Although it's like probably obvious. Can you say the why?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Publishing is lazy.
Okay.
Basically, culturally lazy. And it is an indictment. And it is book publishing, frankly, even more so than magazine. Magazine is a little more dynamic, but it's lazy because you have just the same people making all the decisions. Mm. So it just tends to be cyclical. It tends to be repetitive. Everyone is looking at what everyone else is doing.
Yeah,
which is just fun. Fundamentally, yeah, social media, it apes that trend also.
Yeah.
But it started with publishing. Like something is successful, someone wants to replicate it in their own way. Mm-hmm. And so like so much of Black culture in America has made an excuse of why it's okay to ignore all of these stories sitting in their lap. And so there's always a higher standard that these stories have to pass in order to be worthy of being considered.
Yeah.
And in publishing in particular, it's the domain of a lot of white women who are academically inclined to a lot of these ideas, but emotionally don't feel why it's really important for them to have a book that celebrates Black history,
mm-hmm.
and not in a children's book or an academic tome, which is the two ways that that is done. What is a contemporary telling? And it just wasn't there. And so I was just kind of like, wow. But I also knew the hoops I'd have to jump in order to prove it.
Yeah.
And I was not interested in that in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I've been in those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I've had those conversations as a magazine art director of why it's okay to have Black people on the cover and why you can feature more than two Black people in your magazine and why it's necessary to have more people of color and gay people and Asian and why it's okay to have, you don't have to measure, you know, there is a standard and it has been the norm. And then everything else that falls outside of that needs some sort of larger explanation. And I was just kind of like, fuck all of that and fuck all of you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if I were younger, I would have been more tentative about it. Mm-hmm. In my 40s, I was just kind of like, no, you guys have to explain this to me. And I felt really calm about it. But I needed to kind of find a way to be ready to kind of brace myself for those conversations.
Yeah.
And so I waited a couple of years.
Mm.
And then I found the right agent last March who was really confident in her ability to get it in front of multiple publishers. And that gave me 3 months to write and design the proposal. And I was ready.
Wow.
And so
what made you decide that it was time to pitch it to publishers and to make it a book?
Because several people in my world kept coming back to that.
Okay.
Why aren't you doing this?
Mm.
And in the time that I had stepped aside from it, I figured somebody else would do it.
Yeah.
That I was like, clearly I'm not the first person to think of this.
Right.
And so someone else will do this. I'll see this out in the landscape pretty soon. And I could tell the culture was shifting and there were more of these stories starting to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just figured, oh, somebody else will do this. And I was fine with it. And then time kept passing and I was like, no, this is actually not happening.
Wow.
I actually am going to have to, I'm going to have to do this.
Yeah.
I'd spoken to a couple of publishers directly. I had just reached out to a couple of publishers. And I had exactly the experience I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
Dipped a toe back in, and it happened pretty much how I had forecasted it. And so I was like, really, I don't think this is the right, I don't think I'm the right person. And then a year passed, and I thought, no, I'm ready now.
And then you're like, I'm gonna get an agent though, so I don't have to be the person dealing with these assholes.
Yes.
Not to say they're all assholes, but.
No, basically, yeah. That's what I said. I don't wanna be having these dumb conversations.
It's really mind-boggling, like that. That's how those conversations go,
and they still do.
Yeah,
they still go that way. You know, when my agent set up meetings, it's this whole I learned about this process, and it's you have these basically speed dating conversations. You get on the phone for an hour, and you're feeling each other out because it's a marriage.
Yeah.
And so it's like an arranged marriage. And so you're like, who are you? And I like long walks on the beach. And what's your book about? And how are you going to market it? And they basically want to know how much work you're willing to do because it will fall on you.
Right.
To do a lot of that work. You're having these conversations. And I was ready for it.
Mm.
Pretty much it was a double interview. I was interviewing them. And I started out the conversation with them understanding that I was interviewing them.
Yeah.
And it's basically like, you have to explain to me why you haven't done this. I know this idea is of value.
Right.
Culture has finally caught up.
Yeah.
There are many examples now. This idea is not an outlier. It's just obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to happen. So why should I trust you to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And that reframed all of the conversations I had around it.
Which is, that's how we tell any friend looking for a job. Like, mm-hmm. remember, you're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing you.
Yeah.
Like, this is your future too.
And there's something in that energy that just wakes everyone else up. Mm-hmm. Like, it just becomes a genuine exchange.
Right.
It's less about like, oh, I'm trying to make somebody like me.
Yeah.
And just more about, no, what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
You know, who are you? Do you want to do this? Is this something that excites you? Like, what's the process going to be? And I was very excited to have those conversations too. Like, what do you think this is? Do you feel like this is an important thing?
And were they like, yes, this needs to be out in the world?
Well, you learn really quickly that people say a lot of things. And then when the bidding process starts, you see what they think the value of the thing that they said was amazing. You see what their version of that is.
Right.
And it was a really fascinating experience. The book ended up going to auction and was auctioned against, you know, 6 different publishers. And it was a really interesting experience to see the inner workings of how these publishers make their decisions.
Yeah.
It was fascinating.
Yeah. Can you explain that a little bit more? Like what it means for a book to go to auction?
You know, I just had one experience, so I don't know how systemic this that process is. So I don't want to misrepresent or overrepresent what it is. And my agent really facilitated so many of these conversations. Mm-hmm. I was just basically prepped to have them. And this is all the stuff that I knew I wouldn't know how to navigate, which is why it was a really important thing. And the friend who suggested the agent that I ended up with, she had spoken so reverentially of our agent and how it basically would allow you to ask questions. Like, you wouldn't have to pretend like you knew what was supposed to happen. I didn't know what was supposed to happen. And I just love saying, I don't understand this. Can you explain this to me?
Yeah.
I didn't have to pretend that I was more poised for this. I had no expectations around it, to be really honest with you. What I did have in my heart is I knew this was a really great idea.
Yeah.
And that's all I needed to really focus on, was representing my capacity to do this as an illustrator, as a writer, as a designer. I knew I wanted to design my own book. I knew that I could shepherd it and put it all together. Mm-hmm. And the rest, it was just going to be people with more expertise than me doing that. And my agent set up all the calls. There were 6 people. I mean, it was totally like an auction. You know, people sent in their bids, and then there would be counter bids. And, and it went over an entire week.
Wow.
So every morning I woke up and there would be some new development. And then we'd get on the phone and then we'd discuss it. Do we like this? Do we like that? Is this still the publisher that you want to do? And then there'd be a counter offer. And it was amazing.
Yeah. Like, how were you? You must have been so excited.
I was. It was a really emotional week. I cried a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I cried a lot just out of relief and release.
Yeah, totally.
You know, that there were signs that I wasn't crazy, that this idea was of value, that people were willing to put money behind it, that there was a belief in me as the person to do it. One of the things I grappled with was, why me? Why am I getting to do this? I know I'm not the first person to think about this or to have this process. Like, why am I getting to do this? Like, there's so many other Black artists that would be more qualified or know more history or know more. You know, I wasn't born in this country. Even though I've spent most of my life here, there's a little bit of the imposter syndrome. Like, why am I getting to do this? And I realized that really dug deep. I was like, I know why I'm getting to do this, because I actually know the value of this.
Right.
And I'm going to fight for it.
Do you think too, because you actually did it?
Because I had done it.
You were like, I had done for it.
Right.
For whatever reason.
It wasn't a theoretical idea. I had actually produced a version of it. And that is what I had used to sell. I've done a few more paintings of a few more pioneers because that project had led to other things. So I had done a set of more. So I had color and black and white. It was a really robust mix of people I had who represented, you know, ancestors as well as people who are still alive. And the thinking was that it was going to be educational, but it was going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
Like I knew how to make it beautiful.
Right.
That it wasn't just going to be a history lesson. It was going to be a celebration.
Yeah. And a statement.
Yeah. And I knew that I could make it beautiful.
Yeah.
That everyone who saw it would just want to own it.
Totally.
And so that for me, the packaging of it was as important, frankly. I could, you know, set up a paint and easel and have my watercolors and paints and do a bunch of stuff. But then I knew how to take that work and put it together.
Yeah.
And so that is why I felt confident doing it. I was like, I know how to package this as well as create it.
Right. Which most people or a lot of right. people don't have that.
Right. right. Yeah. And I didn't, frankly, trust any publisher.
Okay.
That is the truth. I didn't trust any publisher to package it.
So you were able to say, this is how this is going to be done. Like, yeah. Is that a part of your agreement?
That was a non-negotiable.
In my head, I'm relating this experience to record deals. Mm-hmm. Cause that's like, I know more about how that works. And I know like a lot of indie record labels are like, yeah, do whatever you want. Like whatever will help you get it out. Whereas some of the bigger ones are like, they want to have a say in that final look and feel. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I was willing to take less money to have more creative control. Okay. And there were a couple of publishers that in that final days were like, oh, we're really excited, but we want to work internally, have our team put it together. And my response was no, just very calmly. No, yeah, it was not, like, I don't have anything happen. To prove to you guys. I don't trust that you will do a better job than I will.
Right.
That confidence is with age. I would not have probably not have had that up front 10 years ago.
Right. I was going to say, when you introduced yourself as an artist, like I felt it. I'm like, yeah, he is. I wouldn't have guessed that you'd only been calling yourself that for
like a year, year and a half.
Yeah. This is a dumb question, but what does it mean to have a book deal, really? Like,
right now, nothing.
Okay.
Like, it's not, it. I don't think of it.
Financial backing to like.
Well, oh, okay.
I see what
you're saying. Symbolically, nothing.
Right.
But logistically, it means a lot.
Okay.
Yes, it actually does.
Yeah.
After taking a sabbatical and kind of redefining to myself what kind of craft I wanted to focus on, mm-hmm. I decided that I actually didn't hate being a graphic designer. I actually just hated the process. I didn't want to be anyone's production assistant. I actually had too much experience for that. Having immersed myself in what being an artist felt like, I felt like I had a refreshed perspective. And I wanted to bring that to my design work. And the idea of collaboration and the idea of compromise, but also really defining myself and representing myself within a process. It just kind of like, I was like, I'm just bringing all of my skills into one basket. I'm not going to differentiate around that. I do a lot of things. There's a lot of work that comes out of my studio. What this book deal has done, it's frankly given me a focus. Because of my advance, I can take less work. I can be more selective about what I'm doing for the few months that I need to focus on this. And it frankly has given me logistically peace of mind. You know, I'm still a hustler. So I'm still kind of like, okay, what do I need to do next? I'm a production guy. So I'm just like, what's next?
Yeah.
And I don't have to think about what's next immediately. Mm. And that's a huge thing.
Is it freeing?
It's just new. I don't know that I'm like, you know, I'm still too new to this process of what happened. I know it's going to change my life. I know that. I don't know how it is going to, but I know that this experience, once this book comes out, I'm going to be seen from a perspective that I'm not going to have a lot of control over. And I'm just letting that unfold. I'm not putting a lot of thought into how it is going to. It's going to expose my work to a lot of people. You know, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
So
or
I'm
what
not,
it's going to bring. Or...
Yeah. No, yeah. No idea.
Totally. But you know, it's going to be good.
But I know it's going to be something.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be something.
I know it's going to be good.
Thank you.
What's the name of the book?
Illustrated Black History.
Does the project have its own Instagram, or is it something you did on your...
No, it's currently on my studio feed, which is called McCallum & Co. And my feed is this, I think it's pretty random, but it's totally indicative of just the variety of work.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of different things. You know, I have a monthly column, an illustrated column with the Chronicle.
Yeah.
That's alongside print work, design work. It just, there's constant work churning, and every time you look through my feed, it's something kind of different.
Yeah.
And that's how I like it.
I love how your illustration work really captures humanity. There's probably a better Thank way you. Of saying that, but it really,
Thank you.
It truly does. Yeah. I really love it.
Thank you. Probably because I put less thought into the tools that I'm using. Mm. And I'm really interested in identity and capturing moments of honesty in what I see.
I feel like that really comes across too.
Thank yeah. you. Mm-hmm. That's really what I put more thought into my work than anything else. I'm still relearning for myself, but what has remained constant, and I don't think it's going to change, is that I will use whatever's in front of me. I'm not precious about whether something's acrylic or watercolor, or I'm using ballpoint pen, or I'm using pencil. It's like what feels honest for this moment right now.
Mm.
That is how I approach pretty much everything.
Wow.
I'm doing, and it's how I approach my design work also.
Yeah.
And that has reframed my own relationship to being a graphic designer. I think it's totally changed my design work. It's made things a lot more. My goal is to eventually to not have a distinction. That's why I put a bunch of shit on my Instagram, because my daily life is a lot of different shit.
Can you, and I do still want to take a step back too, but can, so what is your daily life?
My daily life is a bunch of different shit.
Yeah. And every day is different.
Every day is different.
Cool.
Every day is really different.
I guess how, better question, how are you balancing it all? Because for one, I feel like...
That's a great question.
Yeah. A lot of people that I've seen write books will stop doing everything for uh-huh. a while. Yeah, just in general, how are you balancing?
I will say that my approach to doing this book has been tempered by running a functional studio for a while. I decided when this deal happened that I did not want to be the guy who was only talking about my book all the time.
Why not?
Because I would get tedious to myself. I know a lot of friends, I mean, this Bay Area is a very unique place in that we all know people with books.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a weird
New
thing.
New York's like that too.
New yeah. York's like that too. Like if you're in any sort of media, you know lots of people who are creating books, and I made an active decision that it would make me a little more boring if it is all I was working on.
Totally, yeah.
I just had no interest in having it just fill out all of the air in my world. I was really allergic to that idea for myself. I've always thrived on doing multiple things at the same time, always. And so for me, it is anathema to who I am to just focus on one thing. And so I decided I was going to continue doing what I was doing.
Do they all inform each other too?
Yes.
Yeah.
They all do. Every one thing that I work on informs the next thing.
When you say that you, I'm jumping around a little bit, but yeah. when you say that you do, you like to take an honest approach to the design work too, what does that look like? Does that mean like doing some research first? Like, how do you know what's going to feel honest for design work for like a client project, for mm-hmm. example, rather than your own?
What I used to do as a graphic designer was be slavish to the production cycle, to the time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very much like, let's get it done. Go, 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 go. I have like 2 seconds to think of an answer, and here it is, and let's do it, and go, and this is it, and blah, 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 blah. The last couple of years, I've really changed my approach. I think about the things that I'm doing. I used to be very instinctual, and I trust my instincts, but I have found that giving myself a little bit of room to be considerate of my choices has made me a better designer. For instance, there was a change today from the publisher for the next issue of Good Company magazine. And, you know, there's a time consideration and everyone's aware of it. And I was like, no, I'm actually going to take a few hours and I'm going to think about this because the change is going to kind of affect the architecture of the cover. And that's not a small thing. I really am dedicated to having this cover be a thing that everyone is proud of. And so I'm not rushing this process. I want to be thoughtful about it. And the other thing that is different is that I draw and sketch everything. I used to draw and sketch in my head, and I would never put it down on paper because I got good at not needing to put it down on paper.
Right.
And what I found is that putting it on paper not just takes it out of my head, it allows other people to see what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And so like, being able to sketch out my ideas and say, here, this is what I'm thinking, just orients the conversation. And it takes pressure off of me to feel like, oh, give me 3 more days and I'll show you how amazing this idea that I have is thinking, as opposed to just showing you the idea and us talking through it. And everyone's like, okay, great. And then I have the freedom to just go off for the next 3 days and create it, as opposed to feeling internal pressure to make this thing as amazing as it can be.
Right. And then there being like some sort of pushback or feedback and having to change it where that could have happened with the first sketch. It
could have happened with the first iteration.
Totally.
And so what I'm going to do with this cover tonight is go and sketch. And I've just on the way here, that's what I was thinking about. Mm. And so I have a good sense of how I'm going to approach it, and I'm going to sketch it out and send it to my collaborators and see what they think.
Yeah. I've become the queen, and this was extremely empowering for me, of saying, I need to think about that. Because I am someone who needs to think. Like, this, doing the interviewing thing is the one thing that I've been able to, like, okay, just, I can think as I go. Uh-huh. But typically, that even happened to me on a date the other day. Someone, like, asked me a really intense question. I don't even remember what it was. And I was like, I need to think about that before I answer that. Because whatever's going to come out of my mouth, I'm not going to be happy with later. So, yeah.
Right. And I trust myself in those kind of instinctual answers. But what I've found over the last couple of years is that it puts a lot of pressure. I put a lot of pressure on myself to have that answer immediately. Mm-hmm. Being thoughtful about it has become more important than feeling like I have to have an answer in the moment.
Yeah.
And thinking about it often cements the instinct.
Whatever you, mm-hmm.
You know, I've learned also as a graphic designer that the first idea is probably the best one. Mm-hmm. And it usually is.
Yeah.
And when you start picking it apart, and there's something in that kind of really honest expression that's lost.
Yeah.
When you start deconstructing, that's the magic that, you know, especially when you work with business people who want to understand how design is quantified, you can't quantify it. It just is. And everyone interprets it in a different way. And that is the qualifier, that it's there are different ideas that come about with different combinations of people, that you can come up with something completely distinct being one person, working with one person versus another. You're going to make different decisions. And that's just honest in terms of that expression. And it doesn't have to make sense. But if everybody feels good about it, that's the magic.
Right. Totally.
And so when you start like second guessing, I don't know about this, I don't know, that's when things just fall apart.
Yeah.
And for me, that's when I'm like, okay, no, this is not working.
Going back to your sabbatical, so I'm assuming you had money saved from your work.
I did and I didn't.
Okay.
No, it was really just like I threw myself off of a cliff.
Wow, you were that burnt out or that like...
I don't know that I was burnt out. I was just... It was just calling me.
Okay.
It was calling me. It was like, hey, you have to do this now.
Yeah. And you talked about realizing that you are an artist. You are an artist.
Uh-huh.
But you didn't know how to make a living from that yet.
Uh-huh.
When did that click? And then what does that look like for you today? Like, we've already covered what you do, but...
A year and a half into the process is when it made, I would say a year.
Okay.
A year into the process. And it took me another 6 months to put it into practice.
Okay.
Basically, I was moving away from the thing that had made me a good living.
Which was art directory.
Which was art direction. So when I opened my studio 9 years ago, I moved into the branding world. Okay. Branding small companies, working as a consultant for corporations. Mm-hmm. I directed, you know, campaigns for Design Within Reach, William Sonoma, just companies like that.
Okay.
I was doing a lot of either large projects or more intimate. I love and still do love working with small companies to establish their identity. And I was working with a lot of local clients that you would know, kind of all. And I was doing a lot of therapy and babysitting work that I was just kind of like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it was the part that I hadn't quantified as a value. So people weren't hiring me for it, but they were squeezing me dry for it. I was mostly upset with myself for not creating a value system around that. And yeah. I didn't know how to do that. So that's really what was frustrating me in the process. The design process I love, but I was just kind of like, I'm spending a lot of time counseling people how to make really obvious choices. And so I'm not really enjoying this. So after stepping away from it, I realized, oh, actually the perspective that needed adjustment was mine. They were fine.
Yeah.
I was just kind of like really cranky and persnickety. And I just realized, oh, I just didn't have any boundaries around this.
Yeah.
I was saying yes to shit that I should not have been saying yes to. And then I realized I actually don't want to stop designing. It's the thing that has made me a comfortable living in San Francisco, and I'm really good at it, and I have worked hard to get good at it.
Yeah.
And I want to continue doing it. I thought for a minute I had to make a decision, and I realized I don't have to make a decision. I can do all of it. I know how to multitask. I know how to, and it's not going to be really obvious at first. It's going to take a little while to see how all of this just kind of slots together,
yeah,
and how my daily life is going to be affected by it, and how efficient and effective I'm going to be. And just, I'm just going to have to test out the waters and see how that happens. It took about 6 months to, that's when I announced to old clients again that I was taking work, and work started coming in, and how I created a compensation structure was based on my expertise. Because I always over-delivered, still to this day. And so I was like, I don't want to hear about, I don't want any boundaries to this. I'm not doing anything by the hour or no project rate. I'm over that. I'm not doing it anymore. If you're hiring me, it is like rent.
Okay. So it's like retainer.
It's a retainer.
Okay.
And it's a monthly retainer.
Okay.
And we get to break it off at any moment that it's not working. And so it takes pressure off of the client, takes pressure off of me. And it allows me to be fully engaged and present.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be doing, and what I do changes and morphs. And it always has. My role will change in a project. People think they're hiring me for design. And what they're actually hiring me for is therapy. And so we just established that from the beginning. And so it goes from counseling and strategy to the design process, to the production process. And it gets to really be the fully immersive experience that I know it is,
right,
and that the client doesn't always know, but it orients their expectations from the beginning.
Right. I get nervous doing that for my clients just because if I don't create constraints in what I'm going to do, all of a sudden I'm like managing social media when that's not what I want to be doing. Then your line of work's a little bit different, whereas it all falls under the same umbrella. I guess it's kind of the same but different.
Yeah. And you know, kind of being a shepherd of someone else's ideas, it more importantly reminds me daily that there is their business and my business, and their business is not my business.
Yeah.
I'm there as a facilitator, but I used to get really emotionally caught up in the decisions other people made.
Totally.
I am not stressing myself out about somebody else's bad decision.
Yeah. I think that's something that comes with age. I turned 31 in like a couple of weeks, which I know is still young, but I care so much less about what my clients do than I did.
Wait until you get to your 40s.
Yeah.
You care about what is important,
mm-hmm,
and you let go of everything else.
Right.
And it really has allowed me a space in really collaborating in a way that is honest and I had a client last year that really came up against a lot of boundaries after establishing a really good kind of rapport. And there's always the client who is going to come up against your edges. And it is not about them. It is about you and how you respond to it. And I learned that I ended up having to fire them. And it felt really good. It was overdue. And I needed to learn that lesson all over again.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't have any room for any of that from anyone.
What is that expression? You can't control what happens. You can only control how you respond to it, yep, or whatever.
And yeah, it is the absolute truth.
Yeah. So you started taking on client work again.
Mm-hmm.
And then around the same time, did you start doing like the illustrations for the Chronicle? Like when did...
That happened 6 months after I started illustrating.
So you actually started, I'm assuming that's paid.
It is.
You actually started making some money from your art first before going back to... client work.
Yeah, but it was a kind of slow burn at first.
Yeah.
I had a couple of fine art shows. People were showing interest in it. It was slow and methodical, and I could see how it was going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was just making a living from that, it wouldn't be enough to live in the way that I had been, that I had been in the city. Getting clear with myself about why I was going back into that work, I was like, oh, I can subsidize my own art.
Right.
I was like, that's really super simple. I remember saying it to myself for the first time, being like, oh, why didn't I think about this a year ago? Like,
yeah,
this process would be so much less miserable. It was like, oh, you dummy. Why didn't you think of that?
Yeah.
But it was...
Just changing the mindset to think of your client work as subsidizing your art and creating those boundaries.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And allowing, no matter what is going on in my client work, I am taking time for myself to do my work. Like that was something I was not going to negotiate with.
Yeah.
And it is a constant struggle. Like I have this weird sense of how people with children feel when they work.
Mm-hmm.
I feel guilty when I'm away from it. I can't go a day without trying to fit it in some way, shape, or form. And I always do. But I always wish I had more time with it. You know, I kind of go back and forth like, oh, I wish I had more time today. Like, even on the way here, I was planning on doing some drawing today. And I haven't been able to because I was on the phone a lot with several clients, which is always a delightful experience, even when, you know, shit's going on, you have to make some decisions. I really have come to a really good place with myself, with my client work, and I really like the people that I work with also, which is a really wonderful place to be in and feel. So I'm not aggrieved, you know? I'm not like, I'm working all the time and I'm tired. I love what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But the thing I love more than anything else is sitting down with a pen and paper and drawing for a couple hours a day. Or painting for a couple hours a day. Right now, I'm still kind of like fitting it in around a few things. And what's happening right now is I'm in the process of moving a few things off my plate so that I can turn my attention to my book.
Mm.
That is the most important thing this year. I'm being a lot kinder to myself about, you know, last year I was like, oh, this has to happen now. And now I'm like, actually, it doesn't have to happen now.
Yeah, totally. I would love to spend some time on San Francisco or the Bay Area. You mentioned that you thought about leaving,
mm-hmm,
and signs kept telling you to stay.
Mm-hmm.
What were those signs?
Just the larger culture of the city changing pretty drastically.
Yeah.
The .com, the technology, the internet, whatever you call it, has transformed the city. I don't get into a better or worse conversation because I think that is reductive. The city is changing because it always changes.
Yeah.
This is just the latest change. It has been terrible for the creative community, but it's also been really good for the creative community.
In what ways?
Financially.
People because are those doing. Companies are investing in.
Yeah, and people are here and people are making money and they're buying art.
Right.
People are the artists I know who are here. I don't know anyone who is struggling.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that they're not
right.
struggling. But from what I see, what is terrible is that people can't afford studio spaces. They can't find studio spaces.
Yeah.
There, people are having to get more creative about how they're finding places to do their work. It's not as bountiful there's less space. They're having to move because they cannot just live comfortably in a way that they haven't been. But I don't know anyone who's not having their art sold in some way. Mm. And it's not just San Francisco, it's technology that has made it. Like, we all know Instagram has changed the game.
Yeah.
We can't be casual about that just being a thing. That is technology that has allowed all of us to become, I know, because of Instagram, I am a thriving artist. My career the last couple of years would not have happened in this way without technology. And I'm not casual about that.
Yeah.
Like, I am fully aware. And I think artists need to be aware of that or need to own that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that people can find me globally is wild.
That, really is.
That people I don't know at all send me notes saying that they like my work. That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
And up until a few years ago, that was not possible. Without some intermediary, you know, there's a lot of system in place of how artists were successful. And that pretty much has gone out the window. And there's a lot of self-definition going on, and a young millennial class that has never known anything else. So they're coming into it like just assuming that this is the way it's always been. And this shit is just like 10 years old.
That's a little, so I don't know if I have like the healthiest perspective on this,
mm-hmm.
but what scares me is people losing a sense of true like local community. And I know I'm the queen of internet community. I got friends all over the place. I used to run a global community,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it. And I've had the privilege of meeting all those people in person because mm-hmm. of travel and stuff. But I don't know. I feel like the local community, the person at your coffee shop, the person at your library, whatever, like those things are important.
Yeah.
And I fear for my own generation and the one coming up behind me that that's like not a thing. And I feel like that's a thing that used to play a big role in things yes. so like art. And,
yes.
Yeah.
I don't know that it scares me. It's I'm definitely aware of that, and I agree with you.
Yeah.
But I also think that all of this is really new. We're all adjusting to how invasive this platform is in our life.
Yeah.
There are very few people that are not affected by it in some way, shape, or form. And I think as human beings, this is as shocking a change as the Industrial Revolution. In fact, and I think this is way more severe, has impacted more people. And we're all learning how we are actually going to stay human beings while navigating this thing that is asking us to leave our humanity. So I think this is not a blasé answer at all. Like, I'm not inconsiderate of all of these very real things that we have to be concerned about.
Right.
And they are all concerning.
But it is where we're going, and we need to
adapt to the best we can. Short of a giant global catastrophe,
right.
This is not changing anytime soon.
I think you can avoid it, but it's whether or not you want to and what that means for your career.
And that's a lot of work.
Yeah, totally.
And there's a generation of artists, you know, who are my seniors who are getting to avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're established, they've made their money, they're like moving into the last stages of their lives, and they're like, whew, glad we dodged that bullet.
Do you know Catherine Clark?
I do.
I interviewed her, and she's not that old, but she kind of said that. She's like, I did what I did because I was here at a certain time, so like I couldn't say, I'm too old to like be able to tell you what you should do, you being universal, what people should do today.
Whereas Jessica Silverman is diving into that.
Mm.
You know, Catherine Clark represents patron class that Jessica Silverman is not having to navigate as much as, and of course, I don't know Jessica Silverman's like business model, so that's not what I'm speaking to. But watching her move through the world, she is, check her out. She's a CCA grad that has blazed her trail for her gallery, which is in the Tenderloin. And has been really savvy and very kind of calculated about how she has approached selling art. And it's not conventional. She's been really smart.
So she's a So she's the one who's figuring it out.
She's figuring it out in the technology age, in the midst of all of these tech barons and baronesses and social media. And she's doing that. And she's representative, frankly. I think how galleries are going to be navigating this world.
As long as they can exist. Mm-hmm. That's the important part, I guess.
I don't think it's going anywhere. No. Art as an emotive thing that connects to people, I don't think that's going anywhere. How it's sold, how it's made, how it's packaged is definitely going to change. Frankly, I think it should.
What makes you say that?
Because we're evolving. The things that, you know, stimulate us are changing. It used to be local,
yeah,
community.
Right.
Now it's the world. My practice has kept me focused. I'm more focused on my local community than I think I've ever been. But I'm an outlier.
Yeah.
You know, my column keeps me focused on San Francisco.
Totally.
And having that capacity has been a really grounding thing for me. I'm having a little taste of both. You know, having people reach out to me because they saw my work on Instagram will forever be a strange thing. But it's going to become more normal over time. That I get to go to events where I'm meeting people socially and drawing them, that's as old school as you get.
Right.
That's pretty old school.
It really is.
And I'm just kind of like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
You know, this is my kind of foray into the traditional art life that I didn't really have. So for me, it's new and exciting, and I'm not cynical about it at all. I'm really happy about it. I'm doing something that is really old. I'm not interested in doing, like, you know, a lot of the more kind of experimental stuff. Like, that's just not where my head is.
Right.
If I get there, great, but I'm not rushing to get on trend with where creative life is headed. And I think people are looking for that. I'm surrounded by a lot of ceramicists and painters, and their work is being devoured.
Yeah, totally.
That's not going anywhere. People want a tactile piece of ceramic life that makes them feel connected to the earth.
Yeah.
That's really what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. So the change has made you want to stay more than it's made you want to flee.
Yeah, and I didn't want to flee.
No.
I did not want to flee.
How long have you been here?
This year, 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And the city's changed pretty drastically.
What would you tell a person, that doesn't really matter their age, an artist, a creative who, you know, maybe has some like freelance skills too, who wants to move here or is considering moving here? What would you tell them?
I wouldn't tell an artist to move here right now.
Why is that?
Because it is a hard city to break into. It's a small, hard city. I wouldn't tell anyone to move to San Francisco. I would tell an artist to move to Oakland or Berkeley. That area is still more of a community than San Francisco is.
Yeah.
I'm really privileged in that I had a community baked in before I decided to. So I'm not really qualified to tell someone how they can break in because I had an in. I was already here.
Right.
I knew the landscape. I was surrounded by artists who were encouraging of me. Like, I couldn't imagine being 23 and moving here.
Yeah.
And just like, how do I make this work? That sounds like hell.
It does sound like hell. I take the Stark Room class I'm taking. I don't know how old they are, but they're definitely younger than me. And there's some young kids. And I hear them talk about like how many jobs they work. And like I do all that stuff too, but I'm not trying to like make it in the city as expensive as here. Have you, in terms of the rising cost of living, did your income just rise with that? Or did you also have things like the comfort of rent control?
I do. I'm lucky. I have the comfort of rent control. I also have the comfort of being here for 20 years. I know where to go to. During the year that I was like, I'm not sure how I'm paying my rent this month, that was a really very humbling experience because I've been fortunate to not have to have those. Pretty much since I started working, I've been making a good living. The idea of struggling as an artist is just something that was not on my radar. I knew how creative people worked and struggled, and I had a lot of respect for it, but it's not something I really felt. Feeling it for the first time was a really kind of grounding experience.
Yeah.
I think really important. It gave me a keen insight that I was serious about it. Because I was like, I could go get a job tomorrow and be done with this. Like, I can go to Square. I can go to Uber. Like, I'm overqualified for those jobs.
Right.
Frankly. And I was just kind of like, why am I making my life so difficult right now? In my 40s. Like, why am I doing that? because this is really important to me. Every time I would come back to that, I don't want to have that life. I'd rather make less money and figure out how I'm going to make it work and continue on this path. I do not want to go work for Square. I would like to collaborate. Just even the language around that. Yeah. Like, I'm totally open to collaborating with Square and Apple and Facebook and all that. But going in on the inside, I could not be less interested. That's better for everyone. It's better for them. It's better for me.
It's going to be a better relationship.
It's going to be, I'm going to be excited about that. I am not excited.
Knowing that you can leave. Yeah. It's going to come to an end at some point.
Yeah. And I made a silent commitment to myself. If I'm able to make this work, I'm not interested in working for anyone ever again.
Yeah.
And that sounds wild to say, but it's how I feel. And if I change my mind, I change my mind. I also gave myself the room to do that. If in 5 years I'm like, this is too hard and I can't figure it out, and there's something that comes about and there's an opportunity, I absolutely would look into it. But how I feel right now, and it has not changed, it has gotten deeper, mm-hmm. my commitment to being completely self-sufficient financially as I dig deeper into my own creative practice. And I'm really proud of myself that I've been able to do that.
It's amazing. Yeah, congratulations. Mm-hmm. Before I ask you my last quick question, yeah. is there a quick way to answer, what does it look like to be the art director of a magazine like Good Company today?
It means being flexible. I used to be an art director that had to have all the answers. I don't feel like I have to have all the answers for anyone. I get to say, if someone asks me a question, I don't know. We'll figure it out. Or I don't have an immediate answer for you. Or I have to think about that. It means working with a lot less staff. Mm. It means making a lot of those decisions myself. It means being my own production designer. It means having a printer on speed dial. Mm. It means having a few conversations. It means talking less about things that I used to have to talk a lot about.
Okay.
It means being more self-reliant. And it means trusting my instincts.
Mm-hmm. I'm working with people who trust your instincts.
Mm-hmm. And finding those people who trust their instincts and trust mine.
Cool. Where can people find your work?
Just cosmically, I am relaunching my website on Monday.
Oh, nice.
For the first time in 3 years.
Oh, wow.
I haven't updated it this whole time because I was just kind of like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And it has all of my work under one umbrella. And it's my last name, McCalman.co, McCalman Co. You can also find my work on Instagram and Twitter, at McCalman Co.
What is, last question, what's something you're excited about today?
Weird answer. All of it. I'm thinking every day that I have given myself this opportunity to do and focus on what I love. Yes. And I do. I have a moment every day. I do. I have a very kind of meditative process in every morning. And I say, I'm grateful for this. Like, mm-hmm. I take a moment every day to say, you didn't put yourself on this path to be cavalier about it.
Right.
I take it super seriously that I get to do what I love.
Yeah.
I am not going to be anything other than grateful for the lessons that I'm learning.
Totally. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, yeah. Shannon. This is super fun.
Great conversation.
Thank you.